Thank you for listening to this episode of Stepping Stones Museum for Children's Under the Cupola podcast. I'm Star 99.9's Kevin Begley, alongside my co-host Robert Towns, the Director of Public Affairs at Stepping Stones. In the 1960s, The Who famously sang, "The kids are all right." But after 2 years of the ongoing pandemic and its effects, political and social unrest, economic uncertainty, high-profile incidents of violence, and the more typical challenges of growing up and coming of age, many kids may not be all right. These uncertain times have just exacerbated the stress, anxiety, and depression that many children and teens in our community are experiencing. This is why it's more important than ever to provide children and families with mental health support that they need. May was Mental Health Awareness Month, so we thought it would be a great time to bring in a local mental health expert to talk about this broader acknowledgement of the need for youth and mental health services, the ways that parents and caregivers can help support positive mental health for their children, and about the types of resources available to families if they suspect they need more mental health support for their child. We are thrilled to be joined by local psychologist Gail Melanson, who is also the executive director of Mid-Fairfield Community Care Center. So first and foremost, welcome to Under the Cupola, Gail, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to speak with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. The Mid-Fairfield Community Care Center is going through a name change right now. Many listeners may be familiar with the old name of your organization, the Child Guidance Center of Mid-Fairfield County. Tell us about the Mid-Fairfield County Care Center. How long have you been in operation? Who do you serve? How do you serve them, and what the organization changing its name, how that came about too?
Sure. So Mid-Fairfield's been around since 1956, serving the greater Norwalk area. We also serve Westport, Weston, Wilton, Darien, and New Canaan. And it's really been known as the safety net for families to ensure everyone has access to affordable, quality mental health services. We serve over 2,000 children, adolescents, and adults each year across all our programs. And all our programs are provided in English and Spanish, and we also have a Creole-speaking staff that work with families. And our services are across the spectrum, so from prenatal moms all the way through adulthood, so including preschools and toddlers, adolescents. It's services for all ages. And we have a wide array of services, so anywhere from care coordination services to more traditional outpatient therapy services, with, you know, individual groups, parenting, and psychiatric services, and then more intensive services for more individuals with more intense needs. In terms of our name change, we changed our name because we were originally more of a traditional child guidance center when we first started, and for, you know, first maybe 20 years. And then we've grown with the needs of the community. And so we felt the Mid-Fairfield Community Care Center better reflected the work we do, which is services, not just people coming in for more traditional therapy, but we're in the community. We're in daycares and preschools providing services. We're in high school, elementary. We're in homes. We do in-home work. We're community-based. We provide less traditional of art therapy, music therapy. We have recreation programs that are incorporated. So we felt that name reflected better what we're doing.
Thank you, Dr. Melanson, for joining us. And, in Kevin's introduction, he talked about the litany of reasons why children are facing challenges, you know, to positive mental health. And this is a topic that is getting much, much more attention in the media and in our political circles. And in those areas, they're now framing this as a youth mental health crisis. So on one hand, there is this less stigma involved with people seeking mental health help. But on the other hand, there's this increased need for the capacity for services. So as clinician, what are you seeing right now on the ground? What are the significant needs out there that are being met, and what's not being met?
So I think there's a great deal of pressure on kids and parents today. There's increased social pressures, academic pressures, even extracurricular activities. It used to be kind of more relaxed, and now there's more pressure around those activities. Everyone's striving to do better, but the pressure on everyone to keep up, I think, is really hard on everybody. So what we're seeing, I've been at Mid-Fairfield over 25 years, and just over the past 5 years, I would say, we're seeing more and more acute problems, meaning individuals with higher needs, more intense needs, and at a younger age. So we're seeing more kids who are thinking about suicide, who have attempted suicide, And it used to be, it was an adolescent thing. Now we're seeing elementary school age kids thinking about hurting themselves and killing themselves. We have more people who are self-harming, so are cutting themselves as a means of coping. We're seeing higher levels of anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder. All of those are kind of increased. The good news that we're seeing is there's more awareness and acceptance of mental health. But with that also comes higher demands. So with all of these higher needs, it has increased the demand, as well as the more acute problems has increased the demand. So even though we've continued to increase our staff, and since the pandemic of since 2020, we've increased our staff by 30%, and almost all of our programs are at capacity despite that.
So real quick, you know, Kevin, before your next question, you talked about the pandemic as well. And so how did you meet the needs of your clients during that time frame when we were, I always say, we were physically distancing. I don't like to use the term social distancing, because we are, you know, we are very social beings. And so we need that communication. So, you know, what did you do to help your clients during that period of time where people were physically distancing from each other?
So we introduced telehealth therapy. So, you know, being able to provide the services that were normally in office, we were doing it through Zoom. And we were also doing it over the telephone if people couldn't do that. So that was the biggest adaptation. And it was challenging, because when you're seeing little kids, it's not as easy for them to sit in front of a screen. They were already doing it for school. So we had to really be creative about how we would engage individuals through telehealth and teletherapy. So that was one thing. We also, throughout the pandemic, there was an increased need for concrete things for families, food insecurity, a lot of, you know, other issues, families who didn't have access to the internet so they could access school and therapy and things like that. So we provided a lot of assistance in that. There was many grants that were available to the community, and our care coordinators were in the community delivering things and supporting families in that way as well.
Wow. So I'm the father of an infant and a preschooler. So I'm going to ask a question about younger children. I've heard and read a lot of media stories and reports about early childhood educators, that they are seeing a lot of increased behavioral and emotional struggles from preschoolers and kindergartners in the wake of the pandemic. Have you seen this locally? And what types of advice or tips do you have for parents and caregivers of younger children who may be faced with this type of challenge?
Yes. So we have seen, as I mentioned, kids younger and younger coming in with more serious difficulties. We actually have programs designed specifically to exactly what you're saying, Kevin, to support parents of young children and also young children. We go into local daycares and preschools and help the daycare and preschool providers to support children's social emotional development. And when they are faced with challenges of kids who are having excessive tantrums and really having difficulty managing throughout the day, we work with those providers to really support them and give them strategies and how to support, as well as for parents. We also go into homes of young children and we help support the parent-child relationship and some hands-on support for families who are really struggling.
And I feel like it is such a challenge with young kids, because I feel like the parents' mental health might be getting affected as well because of how stressful it can be, you know,
Absolutely. With toddlers or
infants.
That's our model with the young ones, that we're always supporting the caregivers because it's true, I think, across all ages, that if the parents don't feel supported and if the parents don't have the coping skills and the strategies and the support they need, then they can't be there to support their children. So for parents of young children, we always talk about at a very young age, helping kids to identify their feelings. So it's never too early to start labeling when kids are angry, sad, whatever it is, and teaching them appropriate ways to express their feelings. And I always tell parents, remember, modeling is one of the most important things you do. So we might be telling kids, well, you shouldn't do that when you're angry, yet they're seeing parents slamming things and throwing things. So always remember that your kids are watching you and they're learning from you. So it goes back to that point before, that if you're frustrated and feeling stressed and then displaying these behaviors, that's what your kids are going to see and that's what your kids are going to learn. So it's so important of self-care, take care of yourself. We all want to be there for our kids, but it's so important to make sure that we're okay first before we can be there for our kids.
Absolutely.
So here at Stepping Stones, we have a preschool on site, our LE program, and one of the things in talking to some of the educators up there that blew my mind, but it's something that, you know, happened during this period, is children were used to seeing adults for the longest time with masks on. And then when the masks were taken off, they didn't understand or know how to react to or how to engage with people. So like the pandemic and the things that we had to do to try to keep ourselves safe really disrupted the normal course of socialization for so many kids. And that's one of the reasons why there may be some of this, you know, some of the differences and delays and development.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kids, especially little ones, learn through social cues and facial expressions. So when throughout their day, they're not seeing that, they have a tough time. I mean, we know as adults, it's hard to read someone if you can't see their face and their facial expressions. So think of it as children who that's all they can really go by because they haven't had the same experience. So yeah, we're definitely seeing kids with more delays, a lot of the social delays, a lot of social anxiety. So in some of the older, like latency age children, even mm-hmm. to adolescents, the anxiety of going back to school. So when schools opened up again, we had a lot of school refusal and we would get a lot of referrals and helping kids to transition back in because they became so accustomed to just being home and in the comfort of their home that they were very anxious to go back.
So my kids are older than Kevin's. I have a tween and a teen at home. So, you know, pray for me, but no, I'm kidding. But, but for me, one of the biggest challenges really is managing the external stimuli that's coming in, especially, you know, when there are big, you know, big stories in the news that are negative and hearing about things. And particularly when things not just are happening nationally, but things that also happen locally as well. So, you know, there's some, you know, recent incidents that have been in the news locally as well about things that are dealing with kids that are approximately their age. So, you know, my question is, how do we help our children deal with these negative situations and negative stories? How do we manage that? Because the other aspect of this is social media. Both of my kids have their own phones, so they're on social media. So they get the rumors, the hearsay and all of that kind of stuff. And sometimes even, you know, worse, the images shared on social media as well. So how do we check in on them, make sure they're okay, you know, especially during this period where the children, my kids, their peer group is the most important thing to them in the world right now. And what they think and what they say is what they want to go by. And so, you know, I struggle with that as a dad, trying to reach my kids when they want to hear from their friends. And that's about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think you brought up a lot of great points just in your question is, you know, how do you check in with them? And I think that's what's so important is you do have to check in with them regularly. And really you want to watch their behaviors, listen to what they're saying. An open line of communication. I mean, it starts when they're little, but through adolescence is so important. And a lot of times as caregivers, we think an open line of communication is that we need to tell them what the right thing to do is. But unfortunately, they're going to check out if we're doing more of the talking. So really doing a lot of listening with your kids, hearing what they're saying, hearing where they're coming from, and not necessarily having big reactions. Sometimes kids are going to tell you things and you're going to be like, oh my goodness, what is that? But you really have to try to not overreact. So they are going to be more apt to continue to talk to you and continue to tell you. And then hopefully you can insert guidance in those discussions and guide them into, you know, what they might need for support, what they're hearing that is scary to them and what they might need some clarification. And also being a parent though, and being able to limit some of what they're seeing, limiting the social media, and encouraging them to have downtime, whether it's with the family or with their friends, not just on their phones and on social media. So it's a tough balance. You know that kids are going to want to talk with their peers and be interacting with their peers in this way, but you also have to set some boundaries, but not in a way that they become alienated and then don't want to tell you anything. So it's a fine line. It's not easy being a parent of an adolescent.
I have that in my future coming up.
Yes,
you do.
And so, so often conversations about children's mental health are focused on the children with behavioral issues or, you know, clear signs or signals to parents and educators and others that this child needs to be directed to mental health services. But we also know that there are children out there who may be suffering in silence and who may be doing fine according to all the outward appearances, but may really be struggling internally. How do we know when it's time to access mental health services for your child? When the issue is issue at hand is no longer the typical ups and downs and becomes bigger than something that can be handled within the household, how do you go about accessing services, whether it be through Mid-Fairfield Community Care Center or maybe another organization?
Well, that's a great question. I try to tell people to try to think of mental health as a continuum. Everyone has mental health, and everyone at different points in their life, they're in a healthy place with their mental health. Sometimes it creeps into reacting. So if a family is going through a divorce or there's been a death or something going on, people react to those things. So you may not be as healthy as you were prior. You have to look at when it gets to the other side of the spectrum where things are persisting. So maybe there was an event and, you know, and someone is not really coping and it continues to be a challenge, or someone was sad or angry, but it seems to keep persisting and possibly getting worse. So you want to look at when is it getting to a point where it's interfering with the individual's functioning? Is it impacting their work or school life? Is it impacting their relationships with others? How are they functioning on their own? A lot of times you're going to see things like anger, anxiety, sadness, feelings of hopelessness. So kids aren't going to say, I feel hopeless, but you'll see that they're saying they don't care. They don't care about things. They don't care about doing schoolwork. Academic decline is another thing that you often see. So someone who might have been a good student is all of a sudden kind of tanking, or someone who was just kind of hanging on is failing a lot of their classes. So looking at those things, sleep, eat, and concentration are also often impacted when an individual is suffering. So either excessive sleeping where they're just not wanting to get out of bed, or difficulty sleeping where they keep saying, I was up all night, I couldn't fall asleep. And eating patterns, so either excessive eating or difficulty eating. So all of those regulatory things you're going to want to take a look at and see if there's a big disruption. So if you're seeing a disruption in certain areas of functioning or any of those areas where they seem to be persisting or more excessive than they had been, then that's when you might want to reach out for help. So obviously, yeah, we provide care at Mid-Fairfield. There's many agencies, Norwalk. The good news is that Norwalk is rich with a lot of resources, and there's a lot of resources for caregivers and for individuals to get help.
So one of the things that I kind of realized during this time frame, especially over the last few years, is that so many people are dealing with so many things that they'd lost during this time frame. And that loss could be something, as you said before, actual death of family members, et cetera. But it's also, for children and missing out on certain milestones that they, are used to experiencing. So for instance, I, for years, was a Little League volunteer coach. And so when my son was 12, the season ended abruptly, and no chance to go to any kind of, playoffs or anything like that. And so one of my son's friends said to me, Coach Towns, how come we didn't get that shot to go to Williamsport? Now, our team never had any chance of going to the Little League World Series, really. But in his mind, that was a loss. And so as a parent, one thing that I kind of recognize now that I'm doing is I constantly make decisions when my kids ask me to do things to make up for that loss. Like to say, okay, you missed out over the last few years on so many things. I'll be a little bit more lenient to let you do these things. But I know that that's not really the best thing, to be chasing loss that I can never make up.
And yeah. Again, parenting is about a balance. So you do want to give your kids opportunities when you know they've missed out, but you also can't be their friend, and you do have to make sure you're setting some boundaries and some limits. So I always, recommend to caregivers to ask yourself, why am I allowing them to do this? Is this better for them, or is this my guilt that's dictating why I'm letting them do this? So if it's something that they truly can benefit from and it's something that's going to help them grow and develop, then by all means do it. But if you're just saying yes, even though in your gut, it's not the right thing, but you feel guilty for whatever reason, then you want to try to set that boundary and not say yes in those instances.
And so that leads into the next question that I have too, because recently here at Stepping Stones, we held a parents workshop where we had a local school psychologist talk about parents' coping mechanisms. Because as I just kind of said here, like one of my coping mechanisms right now is trying to, deal with the guilt still of things that I know my kids missed out on that they love. And so, that the discussion we had here highlighted the importance of parents practicing self-care and managing their own coping mechanisms as a means to provide that nurturing guidance and structure that children need. So, you know, we talked about this a little bit, but what is your advice or counsel to parents and caregivers? Because many times we are processing the same anxieties and issues that and stressors that our children are processing, and we're trying to deal with it in real time together.
Right. I think parents tend to, you want the best for your kids. So you want to give and do as much as you can to make sure they're happy. But sometimes it's at the detriment of the parent themselves, because you're not taking care of yourself. You're pushing your needs to the side all the time and putting your children's needs first. But unfortunately, everyone suffers from that. You know, that's the analogy they say when you're on an airplane, you should put your mask on first before you can help others. And it's so true that you really can't support your children if you're suffering from your own depression, anxiety, things like that. So if you need professional support, you should definitely get professional support. But even if you don't need professional support, just doing some self-care and making sure that you, if you enjoy exercising or doing things that you enjoy, make sure you're doing those things and not just making everything about your children, because it ends up putting you in a bad place in terms of your own anxiety, depression, things like that, and resentment that you're, you know, not doing anything for yourself. So I always tell parents, it's not selfish to take care of yourself. It's self-care.
So it's really one of these things where this topic here, we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, and we've really just scratched the surface on this topic. But, you know, our time is running short, so I want to respect it, because I know how busy you are, because you just referenced the fact that capacity is so tight right now as far as people, you know, seeking your services and the services of your organization. So with this last question here, I just want you to tell us, what's one thing that you think parents and caregivers need to hear or need to know from this conversation here?
I think the important thing is just to build communication, make sure you have that relationship with your child. So when things are going wrong, they will feel like they could come to you, and you are tuned into your kid enough to recognize when things are different. A lot of times parents are surprised to hear that their child was thinking certain things that they were thinking. So from a young age, just keep that line of communication going. And, you know, it is nothing to be embarrassed about in terms of seeking professional help. It's considered positive that you are, and I encourage people to do it proactively. Don't wait until things are really bad. If you just feel like you need a little check-in with your child or for yourself, you should do that. And that's more prevention and being proactive. And I would encourage everybody to do that.
So I know I said last question, but I have one more. And it's important, I think, because the audience, I think, needs to hear this. But, you know, we know the Mid-Fairfield Community Care Center services people. But, you know, if people couldn't reach out to your organization, where are some other places that they can go to try to seek out help?
So Family and Children's Agency in Norwalk as well has mental health services. Positive Direction provides substance abuse counseling. Who else? Norwalk Hospital has mental health services there. Catholic Charities in Norwalk also has services. So there's a lot of directories available to families.
Like a 211, for instance?
Yeah, 211. The Norwalk Partnership published on their website all of the resources in Norwalk. And we actually did some recorded presentations for caregivers. So if you go on their website, you can find that. Mid-Fairfield is pretty full with a lot of their programs, but certainly reach out. We are launching a new program, our Healing Arts program, which is going to be providing music and art therapy to families. And that's a brand new program. So we're going to have many openings there, but, you know, definitely reach out. And if we're full and we don't have capacity, we do make recommendations for others in the community.
Thank you so much for everything you're doing, you know, for everyone in our community. We really appreciate it. We know, as I said before, that this is a crisis, but the reality is that there may have been this crisis before the pandemic. We pegged so much on the pandemic, but, you know, kids needed this help before the pandemic started as well. So I'm glad that there's this increased conversation about this, and also, you know, lessened stigma about reaching out to access these services, because this is so very needed. And as you kind of alluded to, this is an important part of overall health, not just mental health.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for what you're doing to support families.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Gail Melanson, for joining us today to talk about children's mental health. And thank you to Robert for your contributions to this amazing discussion. I'm Star 99.9's Kevin Begley, and I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode of Stepping Stones Museum for Children's Under the Cupola podcast. If you are interested in more information about the Mid-Fairfield Community Care Center, visit www.mfccc.org. That's www.mfccc.org. We know there are so many important conversations to be had, so follow us wherever you get your podcasts to hear more discussions like this one. Until next time, goodbye.